This is a recording of the Sharon Parrott teleconference with the Center on Budget and Policy on May 23rd, 2006 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have Allegra Bader in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentation, we will open the floor for questions with instructions given at that time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Bader. Ma'am, please begin.
Hello, and welcome to the second audio conference in the 2006 conference call series, Improving Employment Outcomes for TANF Recipients, Win-Win Solutions for Families and States, hosted by the Center for Law and Social Policy and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. My name is Allegra Bader, and I'm here at CLASP. I'm joined today with Sharon Parrott from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. The focus of today's call is transitional jobs, a promising strategy to help TANF recipients with barriers succeed in the labor market while simultaneously helping states to meet higher participation rates mandated by the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. Today, we are very lucky to be joined by three experts on transitional jobs programs. We have Jan Mueller, co-chair of the National Transitional Jobs Network and director of New Workforce Program Development at LifeTrack Resources, Richard Greenwald, President and CEO of the Transitional Work Corporation, and Linda Nguyen, Planning and Program Development Director of the Tacoma Pierce County Workforce Development Board. Welcome, Linda, Jan, and Richard. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. Before I turn the call over to our featured speakers, I would like to give you some background on our conference call series. The purpose of these calls is to help state policymakers, program administrators, and advocates think about the design of state TANF programs in light of the new TANF provisions in the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. These provisions will require most states to substantially increase the number of TANF recipients participating in work-related activities. In addition to these conference calls, CLASP and the Center on Budget have prepared a guidebook on the new TANF changes and different policy options for states in this next phase of welfare reform. The guidebook is called Implementing the TANF Changes in the Deficit Reduction Act, Win-Win Solutions for Families and States, and it's available for download on both the Center and CLASP's website. Chapter 2 of the guidebook provides information about several welfare-to-work strategies, including transitional jobs. Transitional jobs programs provide a bridge to unsubsidized employment by combining time-limited, subsidized employment with a comprehensive set of services to help participants overcome barriers while building work-related skills. Since many of the families who continue to receive cash assistance under TANF have significant barriers to employment, states seeking an effective approach to serving this population while simultaneously meeting stricter participation requirements, may want to consider creating or expanding transitional jobs programs. As a form of subsidized public or private employment, participation in transitional jobs programs may count towards all hours of a TANF recipient's required hours of participation if the individual participating is receiving earnings from the subsidized job and a residual TANF grant. And now, without further ado, I'd like to turn the call over to our featured speakers. After each speaker, we'll have a few minutes for questions and answers, and when all three speakers have finished, we'll have time for a few more questions. Our first speaker today is Jan Mueller. Jan is currently serving in her second year as co-chair of the National Transitional Jobs Network, which she has been involved with since its inception. Jan is the Director of New Workforce Program Development at LifeTrack Resources, which is an organization that provides a diverse array of services in the Twin Cities metro area, including transitional jobs programs. Jan is going to tell us about the National Transitional Jobs Network and discuss what transitional jobs are and how they can help participants with barriers to employment transition into the workforce. We're very lucky to have Jan on the call. Jan, thanks so much for joining us today, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Allegra. I'm honored to be on the call today, and I appreciate the importance CLASP and the Center on Budget have placed on discussing these types of strategies. First, I'd like to repeat the definition of transitional jobs and describe the types of services they offer. Transitional jobs are time-limited, wage-paying jobs that combine real work, skill development, and support services to help individuals overcome substantial barriers to employment. They operate in rural, urban, and suburban areas of the country. Most often, transitional job placements are in nonprofit environments and also in some governmental agencies. They can also be in private, for-profit employers. The transitional workers earn a wage, generally between minimum wage and $8 per hour, and usually work between 20 and 35 hours per week. The length of the transitional job is usually between 3 and 12 months. During the last portion of the transitional employment, individuals are often assisted in seeking and obtaining unsubsidized employment. There are three most common types of program models. The first one is the individual placement model. It's perhaps the most common of the models, and it involves placing individuals at various sites such as maintenance, food service, hospitals, clerical offices, etc. There may be only one person working a transitional job at a site or several. The second model is called the work crew model, and that generally has work crews of 5 to 7 or perhaps a few more under a supervisor and sent each day to perform a specific job. These may be for maintenance and occasionally clerical pools, but often are outdoor jobs such as parks, schools, or facility-related jobs such as painting. The social enterprise model is a small but growing transitional model and generally involves a not-for-profit business. This particular model is very common in the United Kingdom. The elements of a successful transitional job model include such things as orientation and assessment. This is a very key first element. It most often begins with initial screening. It may include drug testing. Drug testing, by the way, is not meant to exclude anyone from the transitional job experience, but is used to gain full knowledge of the barriers faced by the individual and to then combine treatment options with perhaps a part-time transitional job or to delay the transitional job until the treatment has been provided. Individuals are assessed on such things as academic skills, vocational skill development, work history, and vocational goals. Life skill or job readiness classes may be provided for a period ranging from 1 day or up to 4 weeks prior to placement in a transitional job. These classes focus on the skills needed to succeed in the workforce, such as balancing work and family, financial management, appropriate workplace behavior, including such things as conflict resolution, job search and interviewing skills, and learning the techniques for retention and advancement. Some programs continue these classes for 2 to 4 hours per week, even during the transitional job, to reinforce successful employment strategies. Case management is included in most programs and is work-focused, concentrating on employment counseling and reviewing work performance, such as issues of attendance and punctuality. The transitional job match is a very important element, and options should exist offering a variety of types of job placements and the duties performed. This will enable the individual to discover the positive benefits of working in environments that he or she enjoys. Most programs offer job development assistance to find the unsubsidized position following the transitional job, and some programs provide job retention and advancement assistance after placement in the unsubsidized position. Additional support is usually given in the form of transportation assistance, and that is usually in the form of a bus card. Also, clothing for work, tools, and often funds for emergency situations are also given. Some programs provide linkages to educational services such as ABE, ESL, and GED programs. In some situations, these classes are actually provided at the individual transitional work sites. Small incentives are provided in some programs to recognize incremental accomplishments, such as improvements in attendance, improvements in punctuality, or staying on the job for 90 days. Some programs have utilized short-term gym memberships, aerobic classes, or other promotions received from the business community. The populations typically served by transitional jobs have included TANFs, former offenders, refugees and immigrants, youth, and individuals with disabilities. In TANF programs, transitional job programs have been designed for the entire range of welfare recipients, including the young recipient, the long-term welfare recipient, or the person considered hard to serve. Several reasons exist that make this an effective strategy for the individual with significant barriers. Transitional jobs are a chance to succeed in the real world of work. The individuals work long enough to gain substantial work experience. They develop a career plan and receive the technical and life skill training they need to succeed. They also now have recent work history to add to an application or a resume. The employer usually agrees to provide a reference for future employment. In addition, I have to stress the significant value of the increase in self-esteem that comes from discovering that they can indeed succeed in the workplace. Paid transitional jobs have proven much more successful than unpaid work experience or workfare, where in a large New York program, only 9% moved to unsubsidized positions following their workfare experience. For those who complete a transitional job, 86 to 94% find unsubsidized employment. By earning a paycheck, individuals become eligible for the earned income tax credit, which may increase the family income by 40%. This increase in family income is an effective tool in demonstrating the true benefit of working. Highly effective programs such as transitional jobs range in cost from $5,000 to $8,000 per person when including both the program cost and the subsidized wages. Also, a highly successful program in Georgia actually costs $12,000 per individual. The National Transitional Jobs Network is a coalition of more than 300 programs, policy organizations, and government officials who collaborate in an effort to increase the presence of transitional jobs in the fabric of the workforce system and to ensure the hard-to-employ are prepared through experiential learning to successfully join the workforce. The network was formed in 1999 to support peer networking, provide technical assistance, and promote policy advocacy. The network sponsors a national conference every 12 to 18 months, and the next one is in Atlanta, Georgia, on October 12th and 13th of 2006. Currently, the network is providing technical assistance to a number of cities, including Boston, Oakland, St. Louis, Fargo, San Francisco, Cleveland, and Peoria. The network is also working with Senators Obama and Bayh on a comprehensive bill on families and fathers. As part of that bill, there is a significant section that would support demonstration programs in a number of states on transitional jobs focusing on youth, former prisoners, and the homeless. The bill is likely to include things like child support, fatherhood, and career pathways. Watch for this bill in the next month or two. The network receives financial support from the Joyce Foundation, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and also other private foundations. If any of you on the call are interested, you can visit the website, www.transitionaljobs.net, or call 773-336-6086 to speak to the network coordinator, or feel free to contact me directly at 651-265-2321. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on transitional jobs.
Jan, thanks so much for that great presentation.
Thank you.
We now have time for a few questions. And before you ask your question, I'd like to ask that you please introduce yourself. And also, please remember to mute your phones when you're not asking a question to cut down on background noise. Operator, will you open the lines?
Okay. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now.
Operator?
Yes.
Can you actually open the lines, and then we'll just have participants ask questions without queuing up?
Okay, it'll take just a moment.
No problem. Thank you. Hello? Hello? Are the lines
yes,
open?
Yes, they're coming.
Okay, thanks.
Quick question.
Hi. We're ready to take some questions. If you have a question, you can just chime in.
Hello, I have a question.
Okay, great. Can you tell us where you're calling from?
Yes, California, Sacramento. I work for the Employment Development Department. My name is Ken. And some of the programs that she was talking about, or some of the options in transitional employment, you know, the limited term paid employment type thing with nonprofits or government entities or even private, it sounds like a thing that we used to do back in the 70s called Work Incentive Program or the WIN program. And what we had contracts with private employers, it was called COD, WINCOD. The COD stood for Career Opportunity Development. Are you any of you familiar with that?
Yes.
This sounds a lot like that. What would the differences be in that program that we used to have that I thought was a pretty effective program?
Dan, do you want to speak to that?
Well, I think it's important to note that transitional jobs have had quite a bit of evolution over time, and a number of programs that we might all be thinking about might resemble a transitional job. Certainly going back to the old WPA of the 30s, there's some resemblance, although not a lot, to the old CETA program. I'm not as familiar, Ken, with the program that you are mentioning. I think what's important about transitional jobs and the environments that we're discussing today might be the specific design of the programs as they are designed today for the TANF population. Certainly perhaps the length of the program and the amount of the wages, the number of hours, all of those might be different from the program you are describing.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have another question for Jan?
I have a question.
Okay.
My name is Lisa King, West Bay Community Action in Rhode Island. A lot of my clients have CI backgrounds, bad ones, of course. Is there any way any way of getting a list for a state of companies that hire people with BCI, bad BCIs, or especially the hard to serve? Anyone know anything about that?
Do I understand that you're actually looking for a list of employers?
Yes, if possible, per state.
Per state. And you're specifically in Rhode Island?
Yes, ma'am.
I can certainly do some checking on that for you, Lisa. I'm not aware of any list like that that exists per state at this point.
Okay.
But we can do some checking and see how we can help you.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you. Any other questions? Let's take one more question. And then there will be opportunities to ask Jan questions again at the end of the call.
If nobody else has one, I'll ask another one. This is Ken, again, from EDD in California.
Okay.
Okay. Also, some of the other things that she had mentioned sound like I used to work as a rehabilitation counselor with California Department of Vocational Rehabilitation, and the population I worked with were developmentally disabled adults. And we use several employment models to get them, to try to help them get off SSI or SSDI, which most of our developmentally disabled adults were receiving. And we used a supported employment model, and it sounds similar also to some of the things that the speaker was talking about. And also we used group placement and enclave placement, where we would place people in groups at various employers, or we would contract out groups of our clients to go to different employers and do work for a period of time. Are any of you familiar with that type of supported employment model, and how would you compare it to the transitional employment model that you're discussing?
Ken, this is Jan again.
Yes.
My agency here in Minnesota was for 50 years St. Paul Rehabilitation Center. And we were exactly the kind of organization that you are describing, greatly serving the community with disabilities. Well, what's different in a transitional job model, though, is really the fact that the jobs that are performed are real work for real pay with real production expectations. So what we're trying to do is take a population that may not have a lengthy work history and needs to learn how to be an employee and how to fit the expectations that employers may have for them. Go ahead.
Do you ever utilize job coaches?
Yes, there are models that use job coaches. And one of the things certainly that a lot of people don't realize is that transitional job programs can be a wonderful laboratory in which you really discover what are the true barriers an individual has. In our Advancement Plus model that we operated here in Minnesota, we actually found about 63% had some form of a disability or a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of commonality.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Jan.
You're welcome.
Next, I would like to introduce Richard Greenwald. Richard is president and CEO of the Transitional Work Corporation. TWC is located in Philadelphia, and it's the country's largest urban transitional jobs program and has won national recognition. We are very happy to have Richard on the call with us today to discuss the TWC program. Richard, thanks so much for being here. And before you begin your presentation, I'll just ask the operator to close the lines for Richard's presentation. Operator?
Yes, ma'am. I'm closing them now.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Richard?
Yes. Are we ready?
Yes, you can
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Allegra. And let me just say that's not my dog or whatever other animal that was in the background. I am at work. So thank you, everybody. I'm Richard Greenwald. I'm the president of the Transitional Work Corporation. And I wanted to go through just a brief overview of a description of our program and how our model has worked with TANF recipients in the last close to 8 years. I'm going to start by answering a couple of questions. What is the Transitional Work Corporation? Well, TWC, as we're known, serves 2,700 people a year, and we've served almost 15,000 people in the 8 years of operation since we started here in Philadelphia. We also serve hundreds of employers every year, connecting them with good workers that we've basically vetted for them through our transitional process. TWC is an independent, freestanding, not-for-profit organization governed by a board of directors. The mission of TWC is to serve people seeking self-sufficiency, utilizing the transitional jobs model to provide opportunities and support leading to more competitive employment. TWC builds mutually beneficial partnerships with employers to create a high-quality workforce. So you can see that we feel like we have a twofold mission, both about the participants, but also about our area employers. And we view ourselves in three ways. One is a place where people and most of those people are TANF recipients, although we have worked with some people who are coming out of incarceration. We're a place where people come to get help getting organized around work. Second, we're a place of choice. We'd like to be as much as we can. We're unsubsidized employers value the tested people we connect them to. And finally, we're a learning environment where data is collected, public policy ideas are shared, and implementation practices are explored. So currently, MDRC is doing an evaluation of TWC, and we have also worked with Mathematica and then the collection that the National Transitional Jobs Network that Jan talked about works on as well. We were created in 1998 as part of a partnership among the Department of Public Welfare here in Pennsylvania, the City of Philadelphia, the Pew Charitable Trust, and public-private ventures. As a matter of fact, the concept of the Transitional Work Corporation was sparked by one of the papers PPV published. And it was all a creative response to the Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 96, as well as local Pennsylvania welfare laws. Those groups that I just mentioned worked under a Pew planning grant for 9 months and planned a program based on what were best practices in employment placement work as well as in as education and training programs. And they designed a program almost like the one we're still operating today, although not as comprehensive, and then hired me to run the startup and implementation back in September of 98. crucial to the startup, the planning team addressed the following issues. One, they allocated a budget that was large enough to meet our needs. They organized unions so that it wouldn't be an impediment to our transitional work around the city. They organized the first transitional jobs for us before we even got started, so we had at least a starting block to work out of. They worked to organize the paperwork flow between our organization and the county assistance offices. They incorporated us as a separate nonprofit organization, designed a board that had representation from the city, the state, private sector, and national experts, as well as outlined our bylaws and outlined what the program goals would be. They got administrative, administrative budget from the Pew Charitable Trust. In other words, Pew Charitable Trust put up money for the first 3 years of our operations that allowed us to build administrative capacity at TWC, which allowed us to not only survive but grow and build some success. And we got, and that planning group got buy-in from the Secretary of the Department of Public Welfare at the time, the governor and the mayor's office, the governor and the mayor, which allowed us to get a stepping stone and to build support in the bureaucracies in the state and local governments. And then finally, that planning group got advocates, and there are many good ones in Philadelphia, involved and dedicated to our project. The city and the state at the time were working under Welfare to Work and TANF dollars, and it was a difficult time, as many of you can remember. The Transitional Jobs Program was a significant part of the city strategy and the state strategy that included other Welfare to Work providers, supportive services providers, and community resources, particularly within what was our PIC, which is now called PWDC. And PWDC is the main city agency involved with the program at this point. So how do we serve TANF recipients? Let me just walk you through an overview of some of the key phases in our program staff roles. And Jan hit a lot of them. But what's crucial here is that we recruit and reach out to our participants in advance. While participants have little choice in actually attending our program, they're pretty much sent here. We do meet with them in advance to explain what our program is, and we certainly call them before they start up so it can feel like real work here, the start of real work. And that means that we have a two-week orientation, just like a lot of organizations would before you would start a job. We place a person by the end of their 2 weeks in orientation into a transitional job, and they'll be on our payroll for the next 6 months, or up to 6 months. 25 hours a week, working at minimum wage. The person also has up to 6 months to take advantage of our 10 hours a week of professional development training. So that combination of work and professional development training can allow a person to get credited and work up to 35 hours a week, 10 of that not paid because that's training. We place a person in an unsubsidized job. Once we place a person in an unsubsidized job, we'll track that person and work with that person for an additional 6 months and pay that person a bonus of $800 once they complete 6 months of unsubsidized work. And, of course, while in our program, DPW, the Department of Public Welfare, offers an array of supportive services, including a 50% earnings disregard. Our organization, TWC, has approximately 135 staff. We have six core teams serving around. Each team has around 125 people that they serve at a time. And each team has a cross-trained group of staff that include these core components. Career advising, that's Ken mentioned job coaching. It's something like a job coach. Career advisors have a caseload of approximately 25 to 35 people. They're trained in understanding kind of basic employment EAP needs and the needs of employers. And they also credentialize, meaning that they go out to work sites at least every 2 weeks, working through work-related issues and successes that happen at our transitional work sites with the work supervisor. They also ensure that participants understand what work supports are available, including the EITC, and they work with employers to understand the advanced EITC. Another core staff position here is a facilitator or a trainer. These are both trainers that work in the orientation phase at TWC, but that ongoing career development phase as well that can last up to 6 months. We have a sales team. They have a twofold mission. They have to develop and maintain transitional work sites, because you can be at a transitional site for up to 6 months if you're a participant in our program. And then we're going to help you find or place you into an unsubsidized job, and that can last another 6 months of our support. So you can be in our program for up to a year. And so our sales force works both for finding transitional jobs, which are mainly in government and nonprofit sectors, and then they find unsubsidized jobs all throughout our region. And then finally, we work with work partners. Our job couldn't get done. You can't teach people how to work or Jan talked about assessing people for barriers. You can't figure those out unless people are actually working. You can't do that in a classroom. So without the volunteer support of over 500 work partners around the city, we couldn't get this done. And we work with training those work partners on how to work with our program and our participants every 6 weeks or so. And then there's a whole non-service delivery components of TWC, and I won't run through them. You can imagine a large organization like ours has to have that capacity. One of the most important aspects of that is our finance unit. We have every participant who comes through here on our payroll, so it's not contracted out. We're actually the employer of record here at TWC. That's an overview of our model. What are some of the results? We've enrolled close to 15,000 people since we started, and most of whom got transitional jobs through our program. So meaning they all got paid by us and paid into the tax system. And while they were on our payroll, they were still receiving public assistance. And that they were all assessed. Even if they didn't get an unsubsidized job, they got some services from us. And in many cases, we were able to identify needs and concerns that other agencies were better able to handle. We also know if you go through our program here in Philadelphia, the Transitional Work Corporation, that if you don't fall out of the transitional phase, we'll get you an unsubsidized job. So in other words, almost everybody who comes through here who sticks with us will get an unsubsidized job. That's meaningful because there are programs where you could graduate or end and still not have a job, and that really doesn't happen here and in most of the transitional programs I know of. This year, we'll probably enroll over 2,700 participants. That's the most we've ever done. We'll place almost every one of them in a transitional job. Maybe 60% or so, about 1,600, will get an unsubsidized job after the transitional phase. And of that group, approximately 45% will keep their job 6 months or so. What are some of the unique challenges serving this population? Well, it is a separate population, and as we're apt to do in our country, we do segregate people by populations. But mainly, this is a group connected to a lot of the other populations that you're interested in on the call. I think our biggest challenges, I'll name the top five, and they are children's health issues, which cause a lot of our participants to miss jobs, particularly when they get to the unsubsidized phase, and a lot of those jobs aren't that flexible. Special needs children pose a problem when you're working alternate shifts, etc. Certainly violence is a big issue for us, and the fourth issue is criminal backgrounds. We think around 35 to 40% of the people come through here have a criminal background. And I'll say to the caller from Rhode Island, if I were an employer, I probably wouldn't even sign up for a list of some kind of list that says I'll hire people with criminal backgrounds. I don't know if it's necessarily something that you need to promote if you're an employer, but if you have a good sales force, they will go out and find those jobs. And many of those jobs aren't going to be at the big employers. They're going to be at an array of medium-sized and small employers. But criminal background is a huge issue that our participants are facing. And then the fifth major issue is housing. And then the bonus issue would be some kind of concurrent happening of all those issues together, and we see that often, two or three of those things happening at once. Our program funding works out this way. Most of our $13 million for our yearly budget is TANF dollars, and That comes via the state and then through our PIC, which is the PWDC, the Philadelphia Workforce Development Corporation. We also receive support, significant support from the Annie E. Casey Foundation and the Joyce Foundation. We're in a limited way as well. And certainly, as I mentioned before, in the past, the Pew Charitable Trust have been significant funders of TWC. And while our strategy, our funding strategy, is to diversify, and that's a hugely important vision for us, I think working with the group of people we're working with will always entail significant government input. What are our program costs? Our main costs, the participant costs, are the biggest. Because everybody is paid by us, wages and incentives are probably $3.5 million of our total budget. Programmatic costs are another maybe $7 million. That includes staff and their needs and the program needs. And then, of course, our operating expenses are about $2 million. What kind of transitional jobs do we place people in? Those vary. Housekeeping, clerical, some team crew work that Jan mentioned before, child care, record keeping. Some of the elements of a good transitional job are, one, that it's safe and secure and you can get there in a safe and secure way, that the hours are during the day, when people are in our program, that there's an understanding from the site, the work site, the transitional work site, of our goals, which are that the person may be there up to 6 months but may leave earlier once we find that person a job or she finds herself a job. And that the work sites, when they get involved with our participants, focus on helping people around work issues and no other work issues. In other words, that a work site partner doesn't cross the boundary and start working on some of the supportive service issues that come up as well. Another key component to a good worksite is that we visit it and that we do credentialing at the worksite of our participant, that we've organized the work partner and trained the work partner. And so those are the key ones. I'll say this about work crews, by the way, as an editorial comment. We haven't had big success with work crews, although we do a little of it, because it's often lumping people who haven't had success in the labor market in one crew together and not necessarily good role modeling for each other. But they can work and other places have made them work. What kinds of unsubsidized jobs do TANF participants usually get at the end of our program? There's not one type of job they get. It's varied, but we're averaging about $8 an hour, and about half of those have benefits. How can transitional job programs address worker displacement issues? I would say that the displacement issue is not a real issue for us, but more of a perception issue. And I think when you're placing people in entry-level jobs, there's plenty of opportunities. However, one of the significant accomplishments of the planning committee that started TWC was that, working with the mayor's office, they diligently got unions involved before the startup of TWC. And then, of course, working with employers is everything. You can't ignore employers. You have to include them in your design. For us, for it would be in our board as well, and the expectations of everything we do here. They have to be at the table, and they have to be valued. What are the benefits of a transitional jobs placement with private employers or public employers or nonprofits? You can get work done. We can help you get work done with our transitional workforce. More importantly, we can help train people for some skills that they can transfer to other jobs. I think the caveat here is, Jan mentioned work programs in New York and some other places, that transitional jobs programs are real programs with some kind of vehicle and mechanism into the labor market and support once you get there. There are programs that are more punishment-like, where you just have to earn your welfare check, and those are not the same as transitional jobs. Some of the key lessons we've learned, and this is the last part of my presentation, are that having money for capacity building when you're a startup organization is critical, that you need to emphasize employment from the very beginning and an employment plan from the very beginning in order to practice work and then get over the impediments that are keeping people from getting and keeping jobs. You need to continuously address and refine your mission as you pursue the funding. That realistic performance measures and goals need to be set up in advance, and the ability to accurately collect data and paperwork is hugely important, that advocates need to be involved, that programs that are totally comprehensive like TWC, where we're allowed to both in the beginning recruit people and at the end place and support them, allow you for more control and better results. Particularly the recruitment aspect of it allows you to communicate exactly what your program to your program participants what clear understanding of your program would be and is. That forced collaborations can be difficult and that they're best done when organizations come together naturally. That transitional work and unsubsidized work are not the same and can actually offer the participants and your organization are raised different issues and problems that you need to be ready for. And that work sites need continuous support and training. And communication and expectations among your staff is critical. It's not just about raising people's self-esteem, but at the end it's about getting and keeping a job, and all staff need to be organized around it, as do your funders. And then finally, you want to be able to design a program that while you're working with your funders and the constraints of the law, that you stay flexible and you avoid telling your participant what we need them to do, but rather have them tell us what their needs are. So that concludes my part of the presentation. Thanks for your patience and listening.
Great, Richard, thank you so much. We have time for a couple of questions for Richard before we go on and hear Linda. So, operator, can you please open the line?
All right, they're starting to open now.
Okay, great. Does anybody have a question for Richard?
Hi, I'm Teresa Dooley from PWDC. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi. Richard, thank you for the presentation, and thank you all for inviting me. Richard, I was wondering if you have any information concerning the survey, or not the survey, but the study that is being conducted by MDRC. Do you have any preliminary results from that as of yet?
Thanks for the question. We don't have results yet. There should be. They concluded their enrollment phase, and so there should be some preliminary work. My understanding is in the next few months. So we don't have anything to report just yet, but we're excited about participating in the evaluation.
Great, thanks.
Great, thanks. Can we have one or two more questions for Richard?
Hello.
Sure. Hello.
Yes, hi. This is Olivia Edwards from Chicago. I'm with the Illinois Department of Human Services.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. It's been a very informative session. I have two questions. I'll do one first. The first one is, are the employers that you utilize targeted job positions, are they required to hire any percentage of individuals into unsubsidized positions?
We do not require our transitional employers to hire participants. As a matter of fact, I don't think that's a good practice just in general. It's not a bad idea to have transitional jobs roll over into unsubsidized jobs, and there should be some kind of agreement if the participant does a good job that the person will roll over if that's where you're going. But the challenge for us is getting transitional work sites that will allow our workers an opportunity to stumble and fall and trip and make mistakes as they get organized around work. And then once we have them organized around work and they're consistently meeting the 35 hours, then we'll probably move them out of that transitional job into an unsubsidized job. And the understanding with that transitional site was that they were helping us with that crucial lesson, and it wasn't free labor. You're not going to get a lot of – you might get some good work out of our participant. You may not. It takes a while for somebody to learn a job. And once they learn it, we're going to pull them out of there. So it's more of a voluntary – engagement with the transitional site, and less of this is a temp agency that's going to roll somebody over into your permanent status.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We're going to turn it over to Linda, and you'll have an opportunity to ask Richard, Jan, and Linda some more questions at the end of the call. So, operator, can you please close the line?
conference. They're closing now.
Okay, great. Linda has been involved with workforce development for 18 years. She's had experience operating and overseeing transitional employment programs for youth, ex-offenders, non-custodial parents, and TANF recipients. Linda is currently the Director of Planning and Program Development for the Tacoma Pierce County Workforce Development Council. The council is part of a countywide, partnership-based consortium to implement Washington State's Community Jobs Program, a statewide transitional jobs program. Linda, thanks so much for joining us today to discuss the Community Jobs Program.
Thank you, Allegra, and thanks for giving me this opportunity to showcase the transitional employment effort in Washington State. You know, in 1997, Work First, which is the name of Washington State's Welfare to Work program, began. And at this time, Governor Gary Locke appointed the heads of four state partner agencies to form his Work First subcabinet, which is chaired by the Director of Office of Financial Management. These partner agencies are the Department of Social and Health Services, Washington State Employment Security Department, State Board for Community and Technical Colleges, and the Department of Trade and Economic Development. The sub-cabinet partners function as a team to collectively establish policies and budget to respond to the federal welfare reform mandates. Community Jobs, which is a statewide program here in Washington State, was collectively designed and supported by sub-cabinet partners, the governor, legislators, as well as national and local research and policy institutes and foundations. Community Jobs program began in 1998 to address the needs of individuals who are not able to obtain employment on their own and struggle with extreme barriers to employment. The program incorporates training, intensive support services, case management, and paid work experience that all lead toward permanent economic self-sufficiency. Community Jobs is the first and largest program in the nation to provide welfare recipients with paychecks for their work in public and private nonprofit sectors. You know, we also have a component in the program that addresses the last caller's question to Richard regarding placing folks at sites that roll and turn into unsubsidized employment. We have a component called Career Jump where we do go out to private sector sites and pretty much offer the transitional employment model with the promise, a good faith promise, that once the training is completed that the participant is employed by that site. The Department of Trade and Economic Development in Washington State here administers the Community Jobs Program. There are 18 primary contractors throughout the state, and two of them are tribal organizations. Many of these primary contractors establish partnerships, adding 20 local partners to implement the Community Jobs model in a locally based environment. Contracts are performance-based, which means that payment to contractors is tied to participant performance. These performance areas are development of an individual training plan, an employment start date, 3 months review, program completion, and unsubsidized employment within 90 days of the program exit. Tight communication between local partners and Department of Trade and Economic Development staff results in continuous quality improvement over the years. TANF block grants and reinvestment funds are used to support the Community Jobs Program model. Currently, the state invests $13 million, which has decreased, unfortunately, from $23 million invested in 2002. Not only has funding pressures resulted in less investment, but a shorter program has changed from a 9-month maximum program to 6 months, similar to Philadelphia's program. Despite decreased investments and shortened time frame of the program, Community Jobs continues to yield positive outcomes for the hardest-to-serve TANF recipients. Community Jobs provides 20 hours of paid work experience here in the state per week and adequate time to resolve barriers to unsubsidized employment with individualized wraparound services that were mentioned earlier. Host work sites include educational institutions, government agencies, tribal organizations, nonprofit agencies, and the private sector under the Career Jump component. Participants earn $7.63 per hour, which is Washington State's minimum wage. And they also receive a 50% earnings disregard, qualify for earned income tax credit, which all of these things together increase the participant's income well above just receiving a TANF grant. So for an example, the TANF grant is $546. Someone participating in community jobs, they would bring home $977 a month. So to date, approximately 16,000 individuals have benefited from community jobs program. Three quarters of the participants have either not worked at all in the past 5 years or have a very sporadic work history. More than half of them do not have a high school diploma, and one quarter have at least one criminal conviction in their past. So the typical community jobs participant is a 31-year-old single mom with two children, no high school diploma, less than 1 year of prior job experience, and many personal issues ranging from lack of transportation to an unstable housing situation or domestic violence. So despite these barriers, community jobs currently has a 63% unsubsidized employment rate 1 year after program completion and 18% higher earnings after program completion than the general self-reported post-work first earnings. Community jobs program has had a significant impact due to not only the transitional employment design, but the strong local partnerships that bring leveraged resources to the table. Community action agencies, workforce investment boards, and community-based organizations have access to millions of dollars to partner with Department of Trade and Economic Development to sustain the high level of activities that resulted in phenomenal outcomes. Co-enrollments are common practices among local partners to address issues such as domestic violence, limited English, drug and alcohol abuse, GED prep, basic education, vocational training, and family skills training. The program model is standardized statewide. One challenge to implementing a statewide program is that one model is not always the best fit to address local communities' needs and partnerships. However, you get too much flexibility, local flexibility with the program model that can result in too many variations that can cause confusions about the program to partners and difficulty in streamlining statewide policies and procedures. On the upside, a standardized statewide model is easier to explain, can be tracked for similar results, can be advocated for in a broader context, and of course has wider impacts. Lessons that we have learned to date, Richard mentioned a lot of them. At the local level, we experience also, of course, statewide implementation. Building and sustaining local partnerships with work first agencies and community-based organizations are key to successful implementation. For us in Washington State, referrals come from the Department of Social and Health Services, and so lack of a relationship there will result in lack of referrals into the programs, which, of course, would result in not meeting performance, lost revenue to local programs, and, of course, putting the program at risk. Sustaining strong relationship and communication flow with our Department of Trade and Economic Development partners is key to overcome program implementation barriers that relate to mandated policies and procedures. So at the state level, policies can be established, enhanced, renegotiated so that the program can operate smoothly at the local level. And then local partners, of course, make it happen. They bring local expertise and resources to augment the state's investments and vision. Next lesson learned is, of course, advocate for transitional employment model to state, federal, and local policymakers and funders. And not just during times when budgets are tight, but just continuously to demonstrate significant outcomes and impacts of such a model of community jobs to ensure continued support. And then lastly, being flexible and open to improvements with the program model, which needs to adjust or evolve as participant demographics change, as budgets change, and as local environment change. And that concludes my presentation.
Linda, thank you so much for that presentation. It was really informative. If we can open up the lines, let's have a few questions for Linda, and then we can have questions for all three of the speakers.
Okay, the lines are opening now.
Great, thanks. Does anybody have a question for Linda?
This is Deborah in St. Paul.
If you're not asking a question, please mute your phone.
This is Deborah in St. Paul.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Does Washington State track the outcomes by race and ethnicity? And are you seeing disparities sort of collapse in your 63% placement?
You know, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know if on the line if we have any of our CTED partners online who might be able to. I'm assuming that they do track that. I just don't have a report in front of me that shows the breakdown.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you're interested, I can certainly get back to you with that.
Okay, thank you.
If you have a question that needs some follow-up, you can email me, and I'll give you my contact information at the end of the call. This is Allegra, and I can forward the questions on to the speakers for any follow-up. Does anybody have another question for Linda?
Yes, this is Sister Treat in Kansas City. Can you tell me, Linda, was 90 days enough for the group of people you're working for, and do you ever extend it?
No, the state guidelines, they do allow for requests for waivers, but the 90 days pretty much is set in terms of folks' employment. And for some folks, that really isn't enough time. You know, when you talk about working with individuals with a lot of barriers, it really is a challenge. Even if they stay on for the whole six-month program, add another 3 months, it's still not enough. But overall, we can certainly pat ourselves on the back and say that we've certainly done an exceptional job in placing the majority of the participants coming through.
Thank you.
Yes.
Great. Do we have another question for Linda?
Yes, I have one.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, this is Joe Gazzara from New Jersey Department of Labor.
Hi, Joe.
The question is, what about the upfront process in Washington? Are you taking people from another activity? Is there some form of assessment that determines who goes into transitional jobs?
We certainly do a lot of outreach and marketing to our Department of Social and Health Services partners and Employment Security Department staff. WorkFirst, our TANF clients, actually, that's where they start. And at those points, recommendations on where or a path or a program that would be most appropriate for a participant is made. And so we certainly inform, and the partners are aware of who would most benefit from the Community Jobs Program. So when those referrals are made to the local areas, there is an assessment phase, and that's where all of that occurs up front so that we can develop that individual development plan before we proceed in placing them into a work experience site and begin to work through some of the barriers and training issues.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's open it up now and take questions for all of the speakers.
Have a question, Richard.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, this is one would be, what are the types of transitional jobs, and you may have mentioned that you end up finding for your clients. The second question would be, are there any specific trades involved, such as plumbing, electrical, things like that, construction trades? And then the third question is, what are the types of follow-along services that you have? That's what we used to call them in rehab. Follow-up, post-placement type services?
The type of jobs that we place people into for the transitional phase, we try to give people choice. They're basically housekeeping, clerical, basic kind of clerical stuff, basic kind of record-keeping stuff. There's some work crew work that we do with the city, kind of doing some neighborhood fix-up type stuff. And they're just, jobs here and there across nonprofits and government agencies across the city. So government agencies could be the health department or the health centers, the actual healthcare sites, where we'll be assisting in a variety of ways. There's also... it was me trying to push all the buttons on my phone to stop that ringing. There's a technical issue here on my end. There's also, and those kind of are the types of jobs, by the way, that we get people into in the unsubsidized world. So they're really not targeted necessarily, but there are clusters of jobs that we place people to in the transitional phase. There aren't trades. We've tried to go into kind of some construction trades and some labor trades in the past. We hadn't had a lot of success. Remember that transitional jobs are just that, they're transitional. They're not a fixed period of time. They're up to 6 months, but if we can move somebody into an unsubsidized job faster, that's terrific. So any kind of the training that we do is in and out kind of training. Some people might be in the training for 2 months and might be in there for 6 months, and they may not be certified in any kind of one industry or another. However, people do get certified while they're here, and computer training and some other licenses as well, and they may even move up a grade level or two or even get their GED. But we're not targeting any specific trades. And again, most of the people come through here, by the way, are mothers. We do have some fathers. Finally, follow-along services in the retention phase. We try to visit our unsubsidized sites at least once a month. We try to have contact every week with people, and we try to have contact daily with folks in the unsubsidized phase once they get a job. There are supportive services that are available that include transportation. We provide a bonus of $800 along the way that's incremental during that 6 months. And there's a variety of supportive services that our Department of Public Welfare provides, everything from uniforms to housing emergency needs to all sorts of kind of emergencies that arise. But most importantly, the support is that you have our professional staff person supporting you along the way. So you have what we call a career advisor that's your personal job coach, trying to help you organize and discuss the options when things in your personal life and your work life come together.
I think I need one of those. Thank you, Mike.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes. Hello?
And can I ask the other participants on the call, if you're not asking a question, just to mute your phone? Thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Michelle O'Connell from Just Human Services in Philadelphia. Thank you, everyone, for participating in this. I have a question. After the 6 months of the follow-along time, do you have any data that shows what type of retention you have in the next year or 2 years or 5 years for people who have been placed? And this is directed to anybody.
Well, this is Richard in Philadelphia. One of the issues there is we only get paid to attract people for 6 months. So we know what our 6 months retention rate is, but beyond that, we don't. So MDRC is doing an evaluation of TWC and a sister program in JEVS, coincidentally, and hopefully we'll get some long impact data. There have been MDRC studies of other transitional programs, most notably the New Hope Project in Milwaukee, and they have some long-term data about impact on participants down the road. But as far as I know, I don't know of other long-term studies.
And for Washington State, like Richard, we only get paid up till the placement of the person, and I know retention is something we certainly need to build into to our program model. So we don't have any long-term. I know this state, CTED, the grant for the administrator of the program statewide is looking into doing a retention study. So hopefully that'll come, and when it's published, we'll share that.
Great. Any other questions for any of our speakers?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, this is George Coulter in Cleveland, Ohio. A very informative call, and thanks to all of you, and Jan and Richard, thanks so much for the work that you continue to do through your organizations here in Cleveland. Kind of have a question regarding funding, and it appears that most of our funding is, our predominant source for funding is really through the TANF stream. And just wondering, what your thoughts are on, other populations, how we begin to expand these types of programs to other populations, and the types of funding mechanisms that you are either exploring or that might be available to support other types of populations for these types of programs. Secondly, just kind of looking at some of the stuff that's on the radar screen from the national perspective, I know the Department of Labor is looking at these kind of career advancement accounts through potentially the WIA system that would allow somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3,000 as training dollars for persons to select their own types of training. And it appeared to me, Richard, as you were describing the subsidized work site, it is in one sense a form of training, and wondering if you had any thoughts on how something like that proposed career advancement accounts might impact items like a transitional job and funding for that. And then lastly, the whole idea, Richard, you also mentioned the number of people that you potentially employ each year. I believe the number was about 2,700 that come through the transitional jobs model there. Certainly a large number of employees. Have you begun to look at the issue of tax credits? And I know there's been some work done in some parts of the country kind of looking at this, but wondering if Jan or Richard or any of you have kind of looked at that as a potential mechanism, and what your thoughts are about using tax credits for those that you employ to potentially support some of this work.
Well,
hello,
George, Chestart.
Yes.
Okay. Regarding the tax credits, there may be potential there. I don't see it. We have certainly been looking at that since we started, because what George is referring to, I believe, is that, you know, aggregating tax credits or lumping them together and then kind of reselling them to a third market, like you do in the housing market, could be applicable in a way to generate revenue. The challenge is we're, you know, as a nonprofit organization, we're employing people, we're the employer record, and it's hard to bundle those credits and sell them, and we haven't heard from the IRS that it's actually legal. And so, as far as I know, it's kind of a dead end for us. We can't figure out how this is a legal and doable thing, although I know others are still trying to investigate, but it seems kind of like outside the spirit of the law there. So I wouldn't give up on it, but we have. So the second issue about career advancement, I think that's where it's at. And we had a small contract here in Philadelphia for 4 years, and we had really good success with moving people beyond our program once they were actually working and they were in unsubsidized jobs and been in that job for a year or so. We worked with a lot of people who were our former participants, trying to raise either their salaries or find them a better job or connect them to training. And we did have success in the first two. The hard part, of course, is while you're working full-time to go to a training program to increase your skills to make you more marketable, and it's just hard to happen. But, there's less money for that career advancement stuff. I think it'd be nice if to reinvigorate that. So we're kind of for it. And then finally, regarding just training issues in general, the training that we offer at TWC is not paid. The Department of Public Welfare looks at it as it's a added value that TWC offers, and we'll give you transportation dollars to be a part of TWC, and you'll also get to go to their training. But unpaid training for folks and mandatory training has been our struggle since we started, but it's a nice way to build up participation rates. And I ignored the first question because I couldn't answer it. Maybe Jan.
George, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Thank you for your comments. Let's see, you asked a bit about funding and a bit about programs for other populations. Certainly at the National Transitional Jobs Network, we've been working to assist with any legislation that is possible. I mentioned in my remarks the bill that is going to be released, that the legislation proposed by Senator Obama and Senator Bayh, that will actually, I think, be announced on Father's Day, and it's really aimed at the males in the country, whether they are single, married fathers or not, but certainly the male population. So that's one source, and that will release, if it is passed, competitive demonstration grants that will use transitional jobs for those populations. The Second Chance Act, we all have our fingers crossed, is hopefully going to pass this year, potentially this spring, It's getting very, very close. It has a lot of bipartisan support in both houses. That, of course, is great money for the ex-offender population. And then, you know, FSET and TANF and WEA and HOPE 6 funds have been used. We at the network are working with DOL and DOJ and other policymakers. We could certainly use support of other people around the country. So if you have the ability to promote your support to any of those people, that would be fantastic. At our national conference that I mentioned in Atlanta in October, Mason Bishop from the Department of Labor will be speaking. I think it's important for Mason and other people to really know the interest around the country in expanding these types of programs. So I encourage you to express your interest to all concerned.
Great. Thanks, Jan. And going back to your original question, the career advancement accounts are really just for education and training and are not, that proposal suggests that the career advancement accounts are not to be used for any kind of supportive services. So I don't think that they would really apply to transitional jobs. But I think that we're running out of time for questions, so we're going to wrap up our conference call today. I want to thank all of our panelists for being with us and sharing their insights about transitional jobs. It's been really informative, and we really appreciate them being with us. Before everyone signs off, I would just like to remind you that next week, on Thursday, June 1st, we have another conference call about helping TANF recipients access good jobs. And on June 20th, we have a conference call on skill upgrading and the role of community colleges in helping workers advance in the labor market. If you have any questions about this conference call or any others in the series, please feel free to contact me. You can email me at abaider@clasp.org, CLASP.org, and I'll be happy to get back to you. Also, CLASP is putting out a paper on transitional jobs. It should be up on our website, that's www.clasp.org, by the end of this week. So if you're interested in reading more about transitional jobs, please visit our website. And also, again, on the Center on Budget and on CLASP's website, you can access our guide that I discussed earlier in the call and in Chapter 2, find out more information about transitional jobs and other welfare-to-work strategies. So thanks again to everybody who's joining us today. Goodbye.
That concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect at this time.